KMXD in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Kayla DeRoche. Coming up, a scientific study claims that the 1989 Exxon Valdez oil spill had less of an impact on the declines in salmon and herring numbers than previously thought. And in Bristol Bay, local fabricators are expanding into building set net skiffs. They're customizing those vessels to suit fishermen's needs. That and more coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
Since the 1940s, professors and graduate students from the University of Washington's Fisheries Research Institute have come to Bristol Bay each year to collect data and analyze the salmon run. This year, the biologists are starting their work with a smolt sampling project. KDLG's Nick Shalino went along as they seine smolt from local waterways to continue 7 decades of research on the area's ecosystem.
It's a cool, rainy morning on Alaknikik Lake, where FRI houses its team of biologists studying the Bristol Bay salmon run. The skies are gray, and you can see the fog settled on the slope of Bear Mountain across the lake.
Today we're going to go beach seining.
That's Jackie Carter. She's been a research scientist with FRI's Alaskan Salmon Program since 2004. But FRI has been using beach seines to catch and analyze adolescent salmon, also known as smolt, since 1962.
The guys who started this research program understood that if you want to learn something about sockeye salmon, you need to know something about the habitats in which they live at all life stages, and you need to know who their competitors are and what they're eating.
Professor Daniel Schindler is one of the UW faculty running the Alaskan Salmon Program. He says this kind of sustained, long-term data collection can be used to learn how salmon react to changes in their environment.
This year we're seeing very low water levels and warm water temperatures early. And of course, one of the questions is whether this is an abnormal year or whether it's part of a long-term trend. And you can only get perspective on that question is if you have long-term data.
Schindler says the warmer waters are definitely part of a trend over the last 30 or so years, but adds the salmon seem to be thriving.
What most people don't appreciate is that those warmer conditions have translated into better growth and survival conditions for salmon. So in fact, during the last 20 years, we're seeing more salmon produced out of these watersheds.
Back on the beach, Jackie Carter and her team pull in the seine to see what they've caught.
We're right across from the Ogulewak River, so we get a lot of variety. We have 2-check sockeye smolt. What that means is that they've spent 2 summers rearing in the lake, and we know that they're 2-checks because they're really big. We are also seeing a 1 pink salmon, very small, very skinny, and a few juvenile Arctic char.
Carter and her team drive their skiff from beach to beach making sets, sealing the smolt in plastic bags and recording the water temperature. After a few hours of work, the smolt are brought to a lab where they are measured and weighed to record trends in growth. Biologists Jason Ching and Max Ramos take the measurements.
Scoping.
Is that a pink right there?
Yeah, it's like a pink. This is sockeye there.
FRI's Alaskan Salmon Program started in the late 1940s before Alaska was a state. Not only have they sustained a thorough log of long-term data, but they continue to provide in-season analysis as the run progresses. Professor Schindler says he will interpret the run this summer by recording where fish are caught in the districts, as well as observing test fishery data and escapement numbers.
Parallel to that effort is work here in the watersheds looking at where the fish are spawning, how the individual tributaries build up fish on the spawning grounds, but also looking at, like I said, the environmental conditions and how the juvenile salmon are growing throughout the year.
Schindler says more scientists are on their way up to Bristol Bay to help with FRI's efforts, many of whom are grad students coming to study how to manage a fishery. FRI will be operating this summer from camps at Iliamna Lake, the Wood River, the Chicknick River, and Alaknikik Lake. In Dillingham, I'm Nick Shalino.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
A scientific study published recently says the 1989 Exxon Valdez oil spill in Prince William Sound is less to blame for salmon and herring declines than previously thought. But critics say it's not that simple. The study says the wild red salmon are affected more by adult hatchery-raised pink salmon that compete with reds or eat them when they're small. And the research also says herring declines are more related to increased freshwater from melting glaciers. Critics, including a longtime environmentalist with deep ties to Prince William Sound, say the research helps increase understanding of the complex ecosystem. But it is inaccurate to say the oil spill did not play a major role in fish populations. Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove has more.
The study, published in the journal PLOS 1 in March, looks at fish data from before and after the Exxon Valdez oil spill, along with a variety of other research. After crunching the numbers through their computer models, the new paper's authors say a commonly held belief about the oil spill might not be true. The paper says their analysis of impacts to salmon and herring showed, quote, little overall support for an oil spill effect.
That doesn't mean it didn't affect herring or salmon or other species.
This is study co-author Rich Brenner, a commercial fisheries biologist with the State Department of Fish and Game.
It's just that, you know, with all the other changes that have taken place, the oil spill effect is sort of overshadowed possibly by other factors.
The study authors say those other factors are fresh water from glacial melting related to global warming. In the case of herring, the inundation of fresh water affects the number of juveniles that survive, as well as adult pink salmon outcompeting or eating young red salmon. To put it lightly, longtime environmental consultant Rick Steiner is not buying this explanation. Steiner was a marine conservation professor with the University of Alaska for 30 years and was the university's marine advisor in Prince William Sound before, during, and after the Exxon Valdez oil spill. Steiner says the study is interesting and adds to the overall understanding of the area's ecosystem. But, he says, the researchers' conclusions are not groundbreaking and that there are many other things impacting fish stocks.
You know, for any headline from the study, it's not study finds oil didn't cause long-term impacts on salmon and herring in Prince William Sound, but the headline would simply be study reaffirms multiple factors behind Prince William Sound ecosystem dynamics, and that is the take-home.
Steiner says the ecosystem is so complicated and ever-changing that it is almost impossible to make definitive conclusions about how isolated factors are specifically to blame. As for the researchers' clear statement that there was little data to suggest impact from the oil spill, Steiner has this to say.
That simply is either poorly worded or an inaccurate conclusion. There's abundant scientific documentation of impact of the Exxon Valdez oil spill on herring, salmon, and sockeye and pink salmon.
Steiner says he does not see any major changes to policies coming out of the study. For example, he says, a vast majority in the scientific community already recognizes the negative impact from climate change, so to know herring might be affected is just one more example of that impact. And regarding the balance between pink salmon and reds, with pinks for the most part being shipped to overseas markets, Steiner says many involved in fisheries science have already said there was a problem.
Billions of hatchery fry going out into a coastal ecosystem do have an impact. We know this, and perhaps we've overdone it with hatchery production. We understand that it's been a strong economic driver in places like Prince William Sound, but there's a maxim in ecology that says there's no such thing as a free lunch.
And Steiner says making sure tankers do not accidentally dump massive amounts of crude oil in the wilderness is a no-brainer. Both Steiner and Brenner, the researchers, say seeing the spill right after it happened was difficult.
You know, we were out there in the spill response, and you could see animals dying and the body counts and the carcasses being brought into shore facilities and the oiled animals being brought into rehab facilities and things like that. So it was very graphic.
Brenner was a teenager at the time, having grown up in the area, and says he feels lucky to have seen Prince William Sound before the spill. Brenner had worked as a fisherman, but like many other people, helped with oil cleanup.
For somebody of that age, it was a remarkable thing to see this very wild place turn into a very populated place with a lot going on and oil everywhere. Definitely made a big impression on me.
In looking for a response to the study by Brenner and his colleagues, we reached out several times seeking comment from the Exxon Valdez Oil Spill Trustee Council, which oversees ecosystem restoration efforts through a $900 million civil settlement from Exxon. The Trustee Council is listed on the study as providing some funding, but calls seeking comment on the study and confirmation on the funding amount were not returned. For Alaska Public Media, I'm Casey Grove.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their family.
Bristol Bay has a big fishery, but not a big marine services industry, beyond the seasonal shops that show up in the summer. This spring, a local fabricator, Naknek, expanded their business to try building a few set net skiffs from the ground up. KDLG's Caitlin Tan reports on how that's working out.
George Wilson and Robert Hill are working long hours these days to finish building skiffs before the salmon season takes off. Often 10 hours a day, 7 days a week.
And that's with two dads. We both got kid duties during the week. And this is just a good off-season job for both of us. From commercial fishing, we do this in the winters and spring.
Wilson is the owner of Fishy Fabrications, and Hill is his right-hand man. Since 2013, the business was more of a repair shop, but this March it shifted to a skiff building operation. Since, he and Hill have built two set-net skiffs. Wilson is also native to Naknek. He's been building and repairing boats since the mid-90s, but he says opening a shop in his hometown for local customers is fulfilling.
Very proud and honored a lot. They could have easily gotten these built in Washington. I think that's pretty cool.
The set-net skiff Wilson and Hill are working on now is 23 feet by 9 feet. The average turnaround time is 4 weeks with a cost of $24,000, not including freight. Hill says fishermen are looking for shallow drafts in their skiffs, as well as more room for fish handling. Fishy Fabrication skiffs have false bottoms to keep fish cooler longer.
The people that have the skiff built, their comment was, even though that they use slush ice, the fish on the bottom would get warm because of the heat transfer through the older set-net skiffs. And these ones have a false bottom built into them, so there's an air gap. So even if you're using a bin instead of an insulated tote, it's still going to keep the fish considerably colder.
Hill says the false bottom also helps prevent sinking if people forget to put the deck plugs in. Part of Wilson and Hill's niche in the skiff building industry is they are fishermen too.
Probably in 2 weeks I'll put my welding hood up and have my fishing hat on.
Wilson says being a fisherman, he knows what to add to the boat to make it functional and safe. Ultimately, the boat is custom made for the buyer. And this is what's special about the operation, Hill says.
Just having someone local that you can come in daily and have input on the build of your skiff, I think that's huge. You get exactly what you want.
But it's not just about Fishy Fabrications. Wilson says he sees a lot of potential talent in the Naknek area for other boat and part builders.
I think there's a lot of local talent, whether it's welding or refrigeration or just about anything. But there's a lot of room for growth.
Wilson says he plans to continue building skiffs in the winter, as he has two orders lined up. But for now, he will wrap up the skiff and head out to do what he's always done, fishing. In Naknek, I'm Caitlin Tan.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by AK Teach, now enrolling K-12 homeschool students throughout the state of Alaska, creating partnerships that are flexible, family-friendly, and unique to your child. More information is available at AK Teach or at 907-942-0667.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove in Anchorage and KDLG's Nick Shalino and Caitlin Tan in Billingham. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Kayla DeRoche.